Into the Nexus is a production of amove.tv. Bookmark Amove TV for other great video games and esports podcasts. Into the Nexus is sponsored by listeners like you via patreon.com/ITN. Welcome back, everyone. This is Into the Nexus. I'm Garrett Weinzerl, and I'm sitting here with Kyle Ferguson. Welcome back, Kyle. I see you're already getting your headbang on.
It's a good intro song. What can I say?
It's a good intro song.
I'm a little biased.
Are you a little? Are you saying that you might be a bit biased in your opinion of that song because it does lead into a show that you do?
That and Gorath is an awesome guy who did the little ditty.
Yeah, I really enjoyed
duo queuing with him.
He's a sick axe man. Knows his way around six strings, or maybe seven. I don't know. Maybe he has a seven string guitar. But yeah, we're back, dude. There is a lot to dig into today. We are sitting here. We've had barely 2 days to play around on the PTR to read a phone book of PTR patch notes to try out a new hero who I feel has been overshadowed in the wake of a massive sweeping change to the game and all kinds of other goodies coming to heroes. So honestly, I'm not even sure where to start, man. How's your heroes week treating you? I'm sure you spent some time in the PTR. Knowing you, you probably spent even more time on the live game. Are you like me, Kyle? I've had issues this week getting in to play the live game because I read the PTR patch notes and I'm like, wow, things are changing so much. It seems pointless to get into the live game at the moment.
Yeah, not really. It's really insane to think about all that. It's coming with Gul'dan, and Gul'dan's super solid. We're about to talk about him in the moment, but played some games this past weekend, was rather reserved on it because it was 4th of July. And then the previous weekend, we had like an All Heroes XP event. And then the previous weekend was like the first week of the new season. So I feel like I'm just waiting for a sane weekend to hunker down and get the grind on. Right now, it just kind of goes up in the air. You know, you can expect on holidays for lots of people to be returning. So it's not maybe the best time to get in there and grind it out. Played a good 8 games, though. This weekend of Hero League, netted 9 points. 4 wins, 4 losses. 9 points up, though. We're making our way.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Well, not really that awesome. That sounds actually a little painful, but you seem in very Ferguson spirits regardless.
I'm having a good time, though. They are pretty good matches. Sure, you know, there's always the random throw. There's the guy who says, get ready to lose when he grabbed Kael'thas. Mystery, I know. But that's how he chose to play the game. Those things happen at all leagues. But this is really exciting. And not only Heroes changes, but in the strategy section today, we'll talk about probably the biggest change of all, which is that region globe health pool and this minion thing that came from nowhere.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff that I feel came out of left field. I would call this the left field patch.
If only Gul'dan had a baseball skin.
Well, you know what? He might, because we're getting that lame Li Ming skin, so.
Lame? I think it's pretty cool.
Oh, I find it atrocious, sir. I find it atrocious. Looks like something Volleyball out of League of Legends.
Maybe softball Sonya? Two big bats swirling around.
I'm good.
Ball cap on.
I'm good. The only vaguely sports related skin I'm okay with is Asmodunk, and solely because it's kind of sort of a pun. That's as far as I will take it. But anyways, hey, you know what? At least it's not any Brightwing skins.
Wait, are you just resentful that real sports isn't wearing Kerrigan skins out on the field for us, but we're putting sports skins in our games for them?
You know, I didn't think I was resentful, but now that you've put that out there, I'm thinking if I sat down on a couch with a therapist, we might arrive at that conclusion. So, oh man, wow, that's you went deep into my psyche there, Kyle. But anyway, dude, we got a lot to talk about, so let's dive right into this week's Heroes news.
We're on, boys! Let's light driving up this place!
Can Stitches play now?
Yeah, I love it when... cigar fell in the... Wait!
So we've had a chance to play around with Gul'dan. I am under the impression that you actually purchased him and got to play with him in something other than tribe mode, which is where all the only place I took him. Again, feel like he got overshadowed, man. I was so ready to get in there, buy him, play him a bunch. And then I read about my favorite hero in the game, Zagara, and was like, well, nope, don't give a crap about Gul'dan right now. I want to go try that.
Understandable. And I am equating Gul'dan to Nazebo. And he's going to release in, I think, a really good spot. I was constantly top three damage, if not top damage. But you can't really get a good kill. It's kind of like that Lunara, Nazebo, Gazlo. Gazlo maybe a little wombo combo potential, whereas you have Horrify on Gul'dan, which isn't going to really... It'll do the business, sure, but it's not going to be like, oh my goodness, I'm dead from this amazing combo because it's a little random, kind of like zombie walls. Just like we equated Chromie to Nova, I think Gul'dan's going to come out in a great spot. Will he be someone that we should suggest people to carry with? Not really. I mean, I'm always appreciative of those dedicated Nazebo players, but not truly what you want when the world is full of Kael'thas's, Grey Manes, Li Mings, and the like.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're digging him overall.
We honestly, flavor wise, Villainous, what a great hero to have in the Nexus because it's Gul'dan. He's a little important to lore, you know, maybe old lore and now resurfaced time change lore and movies, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, we didn't know last week what his kit was going to be. We could infer some of it from the video that was put out, but now we have a proper spotlight. We've actually had the time to play Gul'dan. So are you happy? I'm not even talking. Let's remove ourselves for a moment because we're going to spend the rest of this freaking episode getting technical and very video gamey. Is it good for the game? Is it good for the scene? Is it good for us? I right now just want to get down to flavor and lore and the soul of Gul'dan as a character in the world. Comma of Warcraft. Are we happy with this kit? Are we happy that Life Tap is now in the game? Are we happy that Drain Life is now in the game? Are we happy that we now actually have a fear, a proper fear, Kyle?
Let's go one step even more shallow. Looks great and isometric. Those old man bandage pants kind of weird me out, though.
Old man bandage pants.
Yeah, he's got his robe, which we now know he has to somehow put on and work through his back spikes. So I get why he might want to skip pants, but underneath his robe is just a pile of bandages wrapped all around him.
Oh, I did not notice this. I'm trying to look up a picture right now.
So when you queue as him in Quick Match, you're staring at a rather haunting sight of some nice org leg.
Huh. All right. It just looks like it's a robe from here, but I don't know. I'll have to go back in, but okay.
Up top, you know, it looks great. He's got his hands out. Once you do any auto attack at all after you've mounted, you'll have these glowing hands that are constantly undulating with evil power. The persona of him is really there. And of course, Life Tap, it works like it does in World of Warcraft. He has zero mana regeneration, which isn't true for Warlocks, but here, that's the only way you're going to get mana back outside of wells and innervates and orbs and that sort of thing. So Life Tap, really cool dance that you have to do between managing your health with Drain Life or other talents and making sure you don't kill yourself. You can't kill yourself, though, with Life Tap. I've tried. You cannot completely wipe yourself out. That means you cannot activate Divine Palms on yourself. It is pure damage. So it goes through Force of Will on Medivh. It goes through Divine Shield. It goes underneath Tassadar Shield. So if you have a Tassadar Shield, you're not bonus life tapping. You'll just be cutting under that.
So there's no way to get a life tap discount is what you're saying.
Outside of your talents, no.
Gotcha. Alrighty. Okay. Very cool. How do you feel about Drain Life? Because we've spent, I think, the last two episodes talking about how dangerous it is to stand still.
It is quite dangerous. It's well made, though. Drain Life has a heal that is unrelated to the damage. So if someone goes, you know, Force of Will, goes invincible, as long as you're locked onto them, you're going to keep healing yourself, which is a great sort of quality of life adjustment of the ability. If it did damage and that turned into health, Then we're stacking things like vulnerability. What if they take reduced damage from spells? Then you heal less. You got to watch out for that level 13 Artanis who gets spell shield. And now you can't drain him at all. So it's got some good steps to it. The range on it is decent and can be upgraded. Putting points into it doesn't really seem worth it, though. Down the tree, you probably won't be doing a sweet drain life build. Simply the damage isn't high enough, but it's also 100% free. So it's part of your dance. Life tap, get some health back, either through your abilities or drain something in the lane.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. How do you feel about corruption? Because it's interesting, because this is something you and I were just kind of thinking on a lot. You know, is it going to be this dot-based warlock? And it sort of, in a way, we got a little bit of that with corruption. It's definitely obviously not his entire kit is based around the idea of damage over time. But I find it strange just the way it was implemented. Obviously, because you and I played a lot of WoW. We both played warlocks. And this is not the corruption that we know. It's got the three little circles. The first time I activated it, I was like, oh God, is this like Cho'Gall? But they don't actually spread. They're at a fixed distance between each other, the three points where it lands.
I do feel a little bit, DC fan at Comic-Con standing up and saying, that's not my Batman.
Yeah.
When it comes to corruption here, I want a single point click ability. There's so few of them in the game. I mean, even Muradin's Stormbolt, which is like on paper, I want to stun this guy is a skill shot. And I respect that. It raises the skill ceiling, raises the skill floor, makes it more interesting. It's starting to seem like you're going to use your two abilities in conjunction with one another. So you're going to horrify someone in a direction, knowing as you cast the Horrify that they will run over all three of those little explosions, getting maximum stacks. And then later on at level 16, you have a talent where if you hit with all three of them, you do quite a bit of bonus damage.
Yeah, that being said, hitting a hero with all three is a challenge.
Really challenging. And the Horrify is based on the center, but it has a little bit of AI to it. If you Horrify someone into a wall, they will not run into that wall and then just fart around being scared. They will run left or right instead of up into that wall, if that makes sense.
Okay, gotcha. So, because it is still kind of a directionally based effect. Like, you'll travel kind of in the opposite direction of where it was facing when it went off and you were affected by it.
Right, it's in the center outwards, and that'll choose the direction for where people go. So you drop it in the middle of the team fight, everyone scatters in different directions. But if you really wanted to control, like, one guy, let's say Sonya is spinning all over your wall and you're defending, you walk up and you place the Horrify behind her, hoping to make her character run dumbly into the wall and have no pathing. That's not going to work. The character would run the opposite direction because the AI kind of takes over and knows that there's no pathing against the wall there.
Yeah.
Now, it's not as crazy abusable as we may have hoped, but it is very predictable. That's the important thing. They don't just fart around. They don't just do the fear thing where I'm going to go over here for a couple seconds, then I'll go over here for a couple seconds, and now let me run straight towards the raid boss.
Yeah, exactly. Now, did you play around with Reign of Destruction at all? Because I played quite a bit on the PTR in the last couple of days, and I don't think I saw a single Gul'dan take it.
Yeah. I tried it in two live games. Even after watching the video, I was kind of disappointed. But, I got on Infernal Shrines. There's the pit. There's a place you're going to rain down, hit some skeletons or something. Completely underwhelming.
Mm.
I called it Rain of Disappointment by the end of the episode.
And
it was really sad. It's a cool looking ability. Sure, some Infernals would be nice. I'm just going to go ahead and say that since there's no Infernals as part of this reign, that there is a Dreadlord on his way and he's coming soon. But that's just my hopes and dreams. Either way, the level 20 augment doesn't really bump it up. You're not going to BFG this thing on Hammer. Even BFG gets a couple of kills along the way. You can RNG it for a good 2,000 damage. But why do that when Horrify is right there and works so well into your kit?
Yeah.
And people are frozen, rooted, they are completely locked down because they're running scared, but they're rooted. So there's just so much combo potential. And even if you locked people inside of a Leoric wall or into a small area, there's such a small chance that they'll even be hit by the Reign of Destruction.
All right. So, but closing thought, you seem to really be digging him, even though you may be doing the "that's not my Batman" thing about a couple things in his kit.
A little bit, like Fel Flame. At first, I'm glad there's Fel Flames, but I was very disappointed that it looks like a slightly augmented version of Medivh's Arcane Rift. Now,
I'm so glad you brought that up. I had the exact same reaction to that. It seems a little pedestrian.
Yeah, could be a little more flashy, perhaps. I know that from interviews and them talking about skins recently, that they're very aware of the load that they're putting on CPUs and computers. So they have to make sure some skins don't go too wild and take up too much real estate on the machine. And so for that same reason, we might see less flashy abilities, recycled things like the Fel Flame or the Corruption bounces here off of Gull. In the end, though, you're not really going to be auto-attacking, because if you're doing your dance correctly, even though he has a great auto-attack, you can just Fel Flame spam. And at 16, you can get Rampant Hellfire. Every time you hit a hero, it goes up its damage by 6%, maxing out at 30. But that spam is just worlds of fun. So on the surface, you can be a little disappointed at some things. But once you really get in on him and feel that ebb and flow of the life tap, it's a really great kit.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the thing that surprised me the most, was my initial disappointment with Fel Flame, just in terms of like, oh, it's just kind of this, it's Medivh's thing all over again. But the way you could spam it was nuts. And then immediately, I think everyone kind of naturally goes, oh, I can just spam it and then life tap and just keep spam. Wow, okay, that's a lot of damage.
One of the other cool things about him is you may take him in a situation like you would Raynor. Let's say you're up against Kael'thas and you're thinking of going Greymane. Awesome. High damage, maybe I'll be able to kill Kael'thas. But then you think to yourself, one living bomb kind of ruins my day. I have no self-regeneration. And while Nazebo has a little bit of self-regeneration on him, and some other specialists do, Gul'dan's going to pump out good damage, and he'll be able to take care of himself. And some of his talents, like the level 7 Hunger for Power, really cool. I ended up going a very sort of general build, because all his abilities are good from the get-go. All you need to do is augment the dance of life tap how you want. So Hunger for Power increases ability power by 15% and reduces healing received by allies by 25%. Don't heal me, I'll take care of myself. And that's pretty cool. If you go Dark Bargain at level 13, up your maximum health by 25%, but increases your death timer by 15 seconds. Very cool mechanic there. You can hit about 4,500 health on Gul'dan at level 20.
Good God.
That's a lot.
Yeah, I was just about to say, wow. Okay.
This is granted, so you'll be taking chunks of your own health here and there, and you have to manage that, but you can really have some survivability on him. And in that way, he could be picked over other heroes in certain situations. Certainly, if I end up with a Chromie on my team, I might consider Gul'dan over Nazebo.
Yeah. All right. Well, any closing thoughts as we're winding down? Now, folks, if you're interested in Kyle's build, I mean, I'm sure you already kind of went over this on your solo Q&A, but if you only listen to ITN, we've got a link to his build in the show notes if you want to go and take this thing out for a spin. But any closing thoughts on Gul'dan before we put on our hiking boots, Kyle?
At level 20, Demonic Circle is crazy. You get two buttons. You're 2 and 3, at least for me, because I was using some other buttons as well. You lay your demonic circle, and then on a minute cooldown, you can teleport to it instantly. So you can get in the thick of everything and not even bye-bye on Chromie, just straight up disappear. I would like to see some sort of animation, some sort of like, oh, as he like disappears in the shadow, maybe his eyes linger for a second. Because right now, everyone's going, what? Where did Gul'dan go? I thought we had him. And you're just gone. And if you leave that in your Hall of Storms, you'll be immune to any temporal loops that would bring you back, any of those sort of things. So very cool. Huge jump in survivability at level 20, how much you can overextend and things. So I am so excited to get this guy in game. Again, I don't think he'll be first ban, first pick material, but he'll have a very healthy place.
Yeah, his level 20 is pretty crazy. And Zagara's level 20 is pretty crazy now.
Yes.
Oh, man. Just craziness. I'm excited to talk about Zagara a little bit. So, but we'll wait. Let's talk about some of the buffed, the heroes that are getting buffed in the patch that will be coming next week. If we are to assume that this will go the course of every other PTR patch so far, which is, this is scripture. They're just checking for bugs.
It has been announced it will come out Tuesday. a bit scary with things like, you know, random bugs in there right now that hopefully will be fixed, as well as a bummer of a talent for Gul'dan that I would love to see some sort of buff to.
Yeah, I didn't come across any of the bugs personally, other than I just had a hell of a time getting into games. The queue times on the PTR were rough.
Yes. Well, one of the big ones right now is that Maw doesn't trap people in the middle, instead pulls them out to the side.
Oh, wow. Okay, yes. That needs to be fixed. Also, I'm not surprised I didn't see it. I didn't see any cigars.
No, no one went Maw.
Cigars, including myself, picking Maw.
Yeah.
But let's get into it, man. So Cho'Gall, his cooldowns and talents were buffed a bit. Greymane, I'm sure you have something to say about this. The cocktail builds got buffed. Mark for the Kill got buffed. Did it get buffed enough where anyone will take it ever?
The problem with Mark for the Kill is it breaks your rhythm because you turn into a human. And no matter how far back you can engage as Worgen, how cool of a slam dunk he looks flying through the air like that, it just ruins the natural rhythm of things. And for aspiring Greymane players out there, and you're one of them, so this will be good for you too, you don't think about your non-auto attack motions as damage. So go for the throat, swipe, ignore the damage on them. They do amazing damage. That is a bonus. Think about how swipe and go for the throat moves you around the field. And then you'll be playing a better Greymane.
Gotcha. So those are just, what's the word I'm looking for here? Those are just tools to get you to the point where you can get more auto attacks in.
Right.
All right. So plan my attacks in my head as if the only thing I'm killing them with is auto attacks, and just use the other things in service of those auto attacks.
Exactly. So if I'm going to swipe someone, it's not that I want to do a burst of swipe magical damage. It's that I'm using that to carry myself forward or to maybe even perform a body block on the other side of them. If I'm going to use go for the throat and it's not instantly going to be a kill, I use it to catch up with them. So you dark flight them, which is turn into a Worgen, dive, auto attack, swipe. And by that point, they may have overstepped you a little bit. That's when you would use go for the throat to catch up to them. The damage is great. They'll probably die anyway. But that swipe, that go for the throat carries you along as they run away.
Gotcha.
The big problem I see with a lot of Greymane players is they get focused on the ability damage. And then as soon as they're on cooldown, they just stop. And they stop those auto attacks. They stop attacking as human when other things are on cooldown. So focus in on those and you'll be great.
Cool. All righty. So what I'm hearing is you still won't be going for Mark for the Kill.
No, and I will not be doing this new Gil'neas cocktail build. I could be wrong, right? This could come along and all the stacks together are awesome. They're certainly augmenting it in a good way. But for me, the stats that really matter here are 5 damage off my human form. Oh no. And 10% bonus damage now, so up to 50% bonus damage on my Worgen form. So I got buffed. In my playstyle, things are looking real good for Greymane. And I am a little confused because he's fantastic. And I don't want them to stop. He's my carry guy right now. But something might need to be done here.
Yeah, it's one of those head scratchers, right? And there are quite a few in this. Anyway, moving along. Kerrigan got her base health increased. She got her auto attack damage increased, which I'm sure you were always happy to hear about. Auto attacks getting some love.
Sure.
Yeah. Clean Kill's talent stack will now cost a tiny bit of mana.
So you'll no longer be able to, for free, jump around the Infernal Shrines at infinite. Now you will have about 10 mana per jump. So it's not going to be too expensive. They just want to get rid of that playstyle a little bit.
Yeah. The Impaling Blade's radius increase is now a level 7 talent. So that's been moved. There were a lot of talents moved around with this patch.
Which is huge. Being able to move that down from 16, I think it was. I mean, some players simply weren't very good at landing it until 16. It's the old hover siege problem on Hammer. If you wait the whole game to get one talent and then you become good, I see this with Tracers too. They get to 20 and now they're good Tracers because they can top off their health after they recall.
Okay.
By moving these talents earlier, we're going to have a healthier Kerrigan player base.
Well, I dig that. I'm totally down with that.
Yeah.
So, Lunara got quite a few buffs. Leaping Strike got its damage increased. Nature's Calling was reduced to 150%. And again, so Cho'Gall had talent values buffed kind of across the board. Kerrigan had talent values buffed kind of across the board. And so did Lunara.
And most of these are to the off-pick talents to encourage the other picks. Very few talents were actually nerfed and brought down. One of them being the Nature's Calling here that was reduced from 200 to 150, which is a shame for dedicated Lunara players. Certainly takes away some of her power on Battlefield of Eternity, which leaves me thinking, where do I want Lunara?
Just ask Orath. I'm sure he'll have an answer for you.
Fair enough. And Lunara for me is all personal experience. I see a lot of first pick Lunaras. I'm very disappointed. So don't listen to me in this regard.
Only Lunara I trust is Gorath. I've had very similar experiences you have with pickup Lunaras.
Yeah.
But Abathur got his Carapace build buffed. A lot of the pushing talents got their values increased, and there was a slight nerf to the mine build. So keep that in mind, Abathurs. I haven't had the itch to revisit Abathur recently, but I do the mine build, so I'll have to keep that in mind.
Not too much has changed. You lost half a second on the slow.
Yeah.
So if that mattered to you, I'm sure it does for some Abathurs. But really, the Carapace build is looking pretty good. One of the main changes they did here is they made the heal on it go for 4 seconds rather than the entire life of the Carapace. So it's actually a lot more healing output. And I expect Abathur to be doing a lot better in Quick Match because of that.
Sweet. What about Asmodan? How do you feel about him? He got some change. Actually, two of your favorite specialists got some changes, Asmodan and Gazlo.
And I'm excited about Asmodan because I've never really liked Taste for Blood, but I'm not a very methodic player. Squirrely, creative, resilient, all these sort of taglines that I've given myself. So when it comes to doing things like temporal loops, chromie kills, it's not my thing. So now we have Taste for Blood, but alongside it, we have a second quest now, Sieging Wrath, which is based around hitting heroes rather than clearing lanes, which is kind of nice, and you don't need any help to do it. Granted, you only go up to 100 bonus damage rather than the 500 that's capable with Taste for Blood. So it's a decent option for solo queuers. When you're still queuing with your buddy, you get Zeratul to spin on that lane once for you. You're still better off to go see Taste for Blood.
Yeah. And what about Gazlo? He no longer dismounts when on salvage, which excites me as a, you know, I'm Gazlo curious, Kyle.
Yeah?
Yeah. Well, I pick him up every now and then. He's a hero I like to play for fun, not somebody I'm going to take in my Hero League games. But that always drove me nuts. So I'm very excited about that.
It was a bizarre change, and I'm glad they changed it back. So now I can go ahead and mount up when I'm capping that mercenary camp I took and then ride off into the sunset.
Yep. And then he also saw a bunch of increases in the percentage on a lot of his talents.
Things are looking okay for Gazlo.
Good man. Good man. Now, last week we talked about word from Team One that they weren't necessarily happy with Insight on Karazim and to expect some changes. And we're getting one. Insight is now a quest. Every third basic attack is going to restore 14 mana. After it triggers 100 times, every third attack will also reduce the cooldown of all basic abilities by 1 second. Can I interest you in an Insight talent now?
Perhaps. I mean, battle momentum for my Breath of Heaven. I like that idea. Plus, if I'm going Radiant Dash, I mean, this is a great idea if I'm going to go with an extra stack of Radiant Dash at 16, because that's always a little mana expensive. However, one of the problems with Monk, of course, is no one really wants to double support with a Monk because their damage is often so low and you can't really augment it without doing one of these Way of 100 Fist Radiant Dash kind of builds. But that's spell damage. You go with your little fists, and it doesn't give you any stacks. So when I tried Karazim in the PTR, I didn't complete his quest because I got zoned out. I couldn't get in there and actually punch enough to complete the quest. And maybe that's my fault. Maybe that's, you know, maybe I just took him into a quick match and I was countered by too thick of a melee on my side and the enemy team had too much poke. These things could happen.
Yeah.
Will this be the new healing talent? I don't think so.
I don't think so either. But it is a lot. I'm more interested in it.
Much more seductive. Yes. and possibly an option, particularly in, you know, pro play and organized play.
Right, right. Let's talk about Uther. Uther had a lot of changes.
A lot of changes. Now, your personality switch.
Yeah. Now, talk to me about this, because I'm not 100% following you. So you're saying he now has a very aggressive build.
He can.
Okay.
And it's very interesting.
Yes. Now, talk to me about that.
So level one, you are almost required to do a mana talent. You have one, that Fist of Justice, where your auto attacks reduce the cooldown of your Judgment. Cool. Probably won't be taking that one.
Hammer of Justice.
But now you have Beacon of Light. You heal yourself for 30% of all healing done to allied heroes.
Yes.
Not a ton, but you are a melee hero.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to heal someone, it's nice to top yourself off a little bit in the background.
It is. I was also really excited when I saw the title, and then I was a little less excited when I read its functionality, because I play Paladins in World of Warcraft. So I was hoping I could put this on another player like you could in World of Warcraft. But alas, that is not how it works.
But you're still the melee guy who's going to be hitting things. And Uther has traditionally been very low damage. So that allows him to get a little more in the thick of it. Now you add to it Holy Fire, which has always been his inflame talent, but now it is augmented based on your auto attacks to do 20% more damage, stacking three times as you burn next to heroes and auto attack them.
I really like that. You've heard me, and so has anyone who's watched me play Uther in after show games or on stream, refer to his hammer as the Marshmallow Hammer.
Yeah.
Because I'm looking at it, and the top of it looks like it's made out of solid stone, but it tickles. Barely.
And this gives him a sort of scary aura, so you don't really want to hang out by him in the first place. It's up against Cleanse. It's up against the Burden of Guilt, which adds a slow to the end of your Hammer of Justice, so not really, you know, my particular flavor there. So really, it's just Cleanse that it's up against, which to me says, if it's not something obvious for solo queue, let's do some Holy Fire. Then we can add on top of it Blessed Champion. After using Holy Light, your basic attacks heal you and nearby heroes for 20% of the healed amount.
Okay.
Last 5 seconds.
All right. All right. Sign me up. I'm interested in this new build. I mean, now he lost a lot of talents, Kyle, but he did not lose really any of the piano build.
No, you could still perform this. You still got your Protective Shield, Cleanse, Shrink Ray, Benediction. But Benediction is now up against Righteous Defense. Healing a hero with Holy Light reduces all damage they take by 50% for 2 seconds.
Yeah.
That's a lot of negation.
I know, but you know what else is a lot of negation? 2 Holy Lights.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm going to have to try that one out. I'm interested in it. I'm as interested in it as you are, but
You need it when you use Holy Light? With your other talents, you are now lighting on fire and healing in an area around you. That healing bounces back off the people around you, back onto yourself with your talent spec. And there's a really cool aggressive build in here. And I ended up doing Divine Storm with it and had a fantastic time.
I'm excited about it. Do you think the game where it is now, even with all the changes we're seeing today, I think it's still going to be very burst oriented, that there's room for this more aggressive Uther that's more about passive healing. Because if you don't take Benediction, you're not getting as much burst throughput.
And that's tough to say. I don't really mind this idea when we get to level 20. Let's not play to level 20, first of all, because that's a bad idea. But Redemption, now you're the off tank. You're doing quite a bit of damage in the front for a support. And if you get burned down as the off tank, you're going to pop right back up. You can adjust your positioning. It's not like Leoric where you'll just be standing where you were. So there's good options here.
Yeah, no, it's a very good point.
Will Uther just explode in the front line, though? That's a possibility, and that'd be very bad.
Yes, you are right. And then if you become that off tank and you're constantly having to heal yourself, what is the point of Beacon of Light?
Right.
If that 30% of whatever you're casting on someone else is not enough to keep you alive and you have to self-cast Holy Light on yourself is what I'm getting at. Then you're wasting a talent.
And that is dangerous because in this particular build, you're healing other people that aren't you. And then your passives are going to take care of yourself.
Right. Right.
But Uther's always had a healing output problem. So experienced Uther players will not find this build too alien.
Hmm. All right. I'm excited about it because it sounds like a fun way to play Uther. I hope that there are compositions, there are matchups where it makes sense to do this build, because I want to get out there and start beating people down.
And if the damage starts to bridge, you know, Lili standard numbers, we'll absolutely see Divine Storm become a thing. And if that can be double supported, then absolutely Divine Storm will be a thing.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. Arthas got some minor talent improvements. I'm not impressed. Are you?
Arthas?
Yeah.
It's a touch-up.
Yeah. That's exactly what it feels like, a touch-up.
Nothing. Hardened Shell is still needed.
Yes, it is. 20. The Hardened Shell being gone still feels a lot like a nerf to me. I'm also still sour because when he got his rework, Anubarak got just a little poke, and Anubarak came out of it being a tank we're seeing a lot of, and we're still barely seeing any Arthas.
Mm.
Even after the nerf to Anubarak. Still seeing plenty of Anubarak this week, Kyle.
I see some good Arthas play, though. He creates such a great front line that people have a hard time moving past. He's very methodic. He's not going to surprise you. He's not going to randomly disappear from the battlefield. And the engage with Cindergrossa is still good. It's just not there. It's not that. It's not Johanna. She's got the kitchen sink, right? And she's got everything that you would possibly want in a tank. Maybe Arthas needs just one more tool, but after what they did to Muradin coming up soon, I don't know if that'll happen.
Yeah, I don't know. I think we might see everyone else around him taking down a pig or two. Kind of brought to his level, which I don't think I'm necessarily against, to be completely honest. Dahaka got a couple buffs. Adaptation has been buffed, and his talents have been buffed. Leoric also saw very similar kind of talents across the board being improved slightly. Lots of that happening over many, many heroes. Sonya got some of her off-pick talents been brought up in importance, but the main build talents got a slight nerf.
It's not quite as seductive as it was to go anger management at level 20 because you no longer have an increase to your reduction on the stun slows roots against you. Ignore pain sitting right there for you at level 20, so do what you should have been doing anyway.
Yeah, I think Sonya will be fine. Again, especially with the Muradin changes. But that's more or less. Well, Tyrael. We need to talk about Tyrael before we move on. So his basic ability cooldowns and values were buffed. His explosion upon death does 100 more damage.
Big increase.
It is. That thing was already, you know, scary if you weren't paying attention. I mean, most people at this point are like, he's going down. Cheese it. But
it feels like it just needs another push. I get why. I certainly don't want that. But there is something to be said about having a character in the game who we don't kill first. Like, we messed up. We killed Tyrael first. No, and we all explode, and it's awesome, and they messed up, and what a play, and esports flies across the screen. GG comes around. I think it's kind of funny that they've, like, splashed GG at these esports events when one team probably happy, the other one's pissed as heck, and no one types GG in the end. Anyway, moving on.
Yes, Kyle. His off pick talents got buffed. He lost battle momentum, and he had a ton of undocumented changes just kind of across the board, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, cooldown reductions across his whole kit, which is fantastic. You know, 1 point extra on his shield, some minor things, but they're all pointing Tyrael towards the right location. And this could mean solo tank Tyrael. I think he has a hard time regaining the front line if he loses it. If anything gets by him, you know, you gotta land a clutch holy ground to push him out, get back to your team with a throw and do the sanctification. Maybe if you're clustered close enough, that's enough, but keeping that front line is very important.
Yeah, and it's expected. It's what most players are going to expect from you if you're going into solo queue and four other people show up. All right, you pick the warrior. All right, this is your job.
Yeah.
Do you want to take that bet? Trying to do that alone is Tyrael?
He'll still just succeed greatly. He already does, but Sky Temple, where it's good to have someone on the pad that's tanky, and then your main tank out front in those bushes in that lane, ready to actually intercept what's going on. So there's not this cluster as the tank has positioned himself up in the corner, and everyone is like, do we group in behind him and put us up in this dead end? Or do we sort of, when you have one tank on Sky Temple, things get so dirty. And Tyrael makes it so easy there because his circle effect just lines up with every hallway. If we have future maps like that, Tyrael has a place.
All right, that's a good point. It's the first time I think we've just talked about battleground specific points on this rundown. So, well, shall we talk about a couple of the heroes that we would put under the nerf category?
Yes.
All and right.
These are not done lightly.
No. But let's start off with the no surprise to anyone, Kael'thas getting another nerf. Which I want to see internal stats, Kyle, because I'm honestly under the impression now that they have no stats to base anything off of on Kael'thas. He doesn't make it through drafts anymore.
He does, as I experienced actually quite a bit this week.
Okay.
It's odd. And he's not a guaranteed win.
No.
But he's just so frustrating to play against from a general player base viewpoint. And there's always the chance like that ETC to just lose in the late game. So he will continue to be on top unless we remove some of his punishment, the living bomb thing. I don't know. That's so much of his personality nowadays. Do you just lower his damage? I mean, from a armchair designer kind of sitting in my living room yelling at the TV sort of position, I'm just reduce the damage. What's going on? Why are we taking so long? But reducing the or increasing the cooldown of gravity lapse by 2 seconds and adjusting his talents to sort of fit that is an okay move, but they adjusted all his other talents to fit it. So he loses, you know, less gravity lapses per game now, but if you spec'd into it, you're still kind of good the way you were.
Right. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you on your armchair design there, Kyle.
So he's got it. He's got the sun on his kit, and removing that is really where I target if you're not going to get rid of some of that damage. But we'll continue to see Kael'thas be first ban in this next patch.
I believe so as well. Although I'm not sure you need to anymore. I don't think anyone's having enough practice with Kael'thas to really be as effective as they once were.
That's more frightening, though. Like, that's what really horrifies me about Kael'thas. How amazing is he truly? When almost everyone... I played Quick Match this weekend during the holiday. I didn't see a single Kael'thas. So no one's practicing Kael'thas for that off chance for them to get it, which means everyone playing Kael'thas in Hero League right now is subpar. And that's his win rate when they're subpar with him.
That's
unpracticed Kael'thas.
That's how I feel. I definitely feel unpracticed with him. Getting a lot of Jaina games in, though.
I've been first picked this whole week, so it's been kind of a... it's just chance, right? There's no MMR or anything in the background that causes you to be first pick often, but it's been all Greymane and Li Ming for me. And I'm frightened. Because what if I hit a week when I get nothing but third through last? All these Greymane Li Ming skills I've gathered up over 2 weeks now are just in the trash.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you ever say to yourself, okay, time to take a break. I need to go play some Quick Match or play some unranked and specifically not play those two heroes?
Usually Li Ming, Greymane, they're such try-hard mode characters for me. I only play them in Hero League. So when it comes to Quick Match, it's wacky time. With, you know, Gazlos, and I've been working on my Brightwing a little bit here and there. Some Artanis, because I find him fun.
Yeah, I understand that. I was just curious if there was an intentional break for you. Like, no, okay, I need to take a break. I need to go practice my non-try-hard heroes. In case I end up healing, or in case I end up tanking.
I do pursue those things because I need the practice. So right now, my pet project is Tracer. I want to get really good at Tracer because there's always that chance you just destroy an immobile, squishy enemy backline.
But Kyle, she got the worst nerf in the history of this game. With this PTR patch.
What was it?
Kyle, the tech size of Stuck has been reduced.
No.
How can you...
We can't.
As the try-hard solo queue hero that you are, in good conscience, say, I need to go learn this hero that is now unplayable.
Lots of people are rejoicing. I never had a problem with it. I honestly didn't really notice it because it was just peripheral time. When Tracer's coming in at me, either my angle's messed up and my positioning's wrong, that's why she's going to kill me, or I'm looking other places because I'm fine in my positioning for Tracer to come on in.
Yeah.
And she just lands the bomb. There's nothing you could do about it because it's blink forward, land bomb, recall out.
Exactly.
Not too much you could do there.
Yeah. That's the other thing.
I wasn't looking for the text.
It's a good point. It's a good point. But
to your earlier point, you know, I do want to make that clear that, you know, I do efficient practice. One of the odd things in my life right now is the streams. And I know all these guys. Like, we have our patrons for ITN. There's the patrons for solo Q&A. And we've gotten to know each other so much that in the fact when we get into banning, we're getting rid of Chromies and Karsus's Asmodan. And it's kind of a wacky spot. And yeah. We have a very wide range of skill sets. So when I finish our custom games for the night, I, you know, usually dinner, there's a bit of a break in there, but there is time to go practice in unranked because I need to make sure I play to my skill set, not our friends.
Mm. All right. Good point.
And that's really important.
That's really interesting. I'm glad you dove into that. Thank you for sharing that with us. So final hero we want to talk about that we classified under nerfs is Brightwing. Now, originally, when the PTR patch notes went up, it said that Soothing Mist heals was decreased, when in reality, it was increased. Now, was it originally increased, or did they make a change in the course of, like, a day?
This must be just a typo. Same with these Tyrael notes that didn't make it.
Gotcha. All right, because that, I saw that, and I was losing my mind.
Lots of people were very upset to see Brightwing's Soothing Mist going down.
I was packing my pitchfork and torch and buying a plane ticket to Irvine.
It does feel a little unwarranted.
I would phase shift, but that got nerfed as well.
Yes, the entire phase shift build has been neutered.
It has.
And that may be a little strong of a word, but oof. The playstyle of phase shift really, really hurts now. Your level one talent, hyper shift, no longer works on yourself. It's only allied heals that are going to give you a reduced cooldown for your teleport.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say neutered is too strong of a word. I would just say it's incorrect, as Brightwing is a female, so you should use the word spayed.
Oh, of course.
Sorry. I had to get that joke in there. But yeah, it's nothing else really got buffed. Which then this is the thing I hate to see the most. Just about everyone else who had their main builds nerfed a bit, had their off-pick builds improved in some way, and that is not the case with Brightwing here.
Well, and the saddest thing is level 7 phase shield. I mean, take whatever talents you want it for. There's some cute ones in there that can augment the hypershift build, but phase shield now only lasts 10 seconds instead of 20. Now, 10 seconds is a really long time in a MOBA. I think you'll still be able to get quite a bit done with phase shield, but this is what allowed you to sort of prep a fight. I'm going to hearth back. I'll come in on the Jaina, give her bonus health. Will it be used immediately? Who knows? But there's always the chance that me on that Tracer, I'm going to come around the back on that Jaina, and I'll be happy 13 seconds later that I did that for Jaina.
Yeah. Now, don't get me wrong. This increases the skill ceiling, and I'm okay with that. I like that, but this just seems steep.
It's important to remember, though, that while we didn't see the other buffs to other talents that aren't the phase shift build, by augmenting her Soothing Mist and increasing the heal on it, every single one of those percent-based talents got better. The one that gives you increased healing when someone has a pixie dust, your level 20 revitalizing mist build, which required some other talent picks, is now better. So
that's a good point. Actually, it's a very, very fair point.
Phase shield is an extremely fun build to play. I really like the style.
I
love the 20 seconds.
I like how methodical it is. I like that I have this game plan, and there's no other hero in the game that feels like playing this way. I'm not necessarily saying it's dead. And I don't disagree with all the changes made. I really agree with the change to the hypershift talent. I don't think you should get a discount for healing yourself, because you're always healing yourself and there's no skill whatsoever involved in that. You're being rewarded for doing nothing, essentially. And I don't necessarily think that's good game design.
I'd encourage Brightwing to go solo lane in the early game. There's nothing wrong with Brightwing being left behind while everyone rides the objective to soak and then join later on with a sweet phase shield. But doing a solo lane Brightwing from the beginning wasn't really the personality they were going for. And if that's all they targeted, this is a decent way to do it. But we'll have to see what the overall effect of losing 1 2-second person for this build does.
Yeah. I really do dig the buff to the heal, though, because pre-10 Brightwing can be an exercise in breath holding. So, anyways, let's talk about some of the reworks, because there were quite a few and some of them are mind-boggling. But let's start with one of the easier ones to wrap our head around, which is Jaina. So now Blizzard, Kyle, does slightly less damage, but there's three waves baked in. Out the gate, Blizzard lands three times.
Yes. So for sweet destruction, kill everybody skill Jaina's, they're very sad this week, because this means less damage on the first two waves, and they weren't taking the third wave anyway because everyone walks out of it. That is the argument I've heard the most this week for this to be just a straight nerf, is no one's going to stand in the third wave.
Yes.
After week two. I certainly had some trouble this week as two waves would come down, and I say, excellent, time to engage. Oh, crap.
Ow, that hurt. I'm dead. Yes, that's very true. You and I had this exact same discussion earlier today when we were just kind of hanging out, working on the notes. And I was like, oh, man, I don't know how I feel about this Jaina thing. But you made a really good point that even if you're not standing in it, you're stopping people from standing there. It is zone control. And now Jaina has more zone control from level one.
Which does help define Jaina's personality as a zone control character. We have our several different burst mages, and they each have their own distinct personalities now. And I like that a lot. Cone of Cold got buffed too. Cone of Cold, though, always throws this whole zoning business for a loop, though, because ideally, particularly with talent stacks, I want you to get in there in Cone of Cold first, because it's your most mana efficient damage for multiple people. And then you follow up with the Blizzard.
Exactly, because Blizzard does more damage. It's going to do even more damage if you Cone of Cold at first, because now they are chilled.
But you've already lost some of your zoning long-range power by having to walk in there
exactly
with your own 2 feet and do the Cone of Cold.
Yes, thank you. There are many times where it's foolish to run in and do your Cone of Cold first, so you're forced to do Blizzard. But in the back of your mind, you're like, ah, this feels terrible.
Yeah. And these three waves do encourage a Ring of Frost play style. And I feel like we're moving ever further away from our previous Water Elemental style, which
yes
has its ups and downs, but talent diversity is good.
Talent diversity is good. That being said, I'm already a Ring of Frost Jaina, as pretty much all Jainas are, so I don't even know why I'm saying that. But I'm overall excited for these changes.
Right, and if this can make the majority of Jainas become better by thinking of themselves as zoners, we're on Infernal Shrines, here's the obvious entrance from the enemy side, let's place a Blizzard there as they approach, saying, do not enter, that's a big deal. One of the real powers of Divine Palm on Monk isn't so much that you're going to get a sweet heal in the pro scene, because that rarely happens, everyone's going to stop attacking. But what you've done is you've ruined the whole enemy's plan. You've disrupted them by stopping them from attacking your tank. And now they're all standing around for 2 seconds. That's extremely powerful.
Yeah, it's very easy to fall into the mental trap of feeling that an ability that didn't cause damage or didn't land a big heal, in the case of Monk's Divine Palm, is bad. And you're losing value. And in a way, yes. I mean, if you're just looking at raw stats, yes, you're losing out on stats. But something else occurred. You denied someone moving into a zone, possibly getting a kill on one of your other teammates, or even you. And the same thing with Monk, which is what you just said. So let's dive into what I've been waiting for all show, Kyle. Let's talk about Zagara's rework. Because if I were to show you this written on paper, it would look like a comical scroll from a bad medieval film.
You mean like the kid in King Arthur's court?
Like the king's scroll, and you roll it out, and it just continues down the aisle.
Oh, comically, yes.
Yes, a comically long scroll of paper.
Why haven't they done that in Game of Thrones?
Because it's a good show. But, Zagara, massive rework. Did you have any idea this was coming?
No. But it makes sense at this stage of the game. We are redefining and honing characters' personalities so that as we add more characters to the game, they all have their individual places. And I may now choose to take Zagara in a situation I wouldn't have before, and I may now choose to not take Zagara because we already have what she brings. This is all a conversation we're having, you know, sort of the seasoning on top, the cherry that's going to add to this strategy section today of the laning phase that is changing. So yeah. Zagara is absolutely going to have a place in the new game. We'll get to that soon. But there is no way to dissect this on paper and tell you what happened without just talking about her personality now.
No.
It is very busy.
It's very strong. She's an exceptionally strong personality. She's not having an identity crisis in any way, shape, or form. Zagara is more focused in what she brings to your game, I think, than she ever has been. In some ways that are scaring people. Some of the comments I've seen around the internet talking about the vision that Zagara brings to a game now, words like Imba and Broken being thrown around quite a bit. But I would argue that has come at a cost, Kyle. Zagara has been put in a box that is so rigid and defined that I'm not sure I actually like the changes.
Well, the big one, when you first get in, is going to be that Banelings no longer channel and shoot four out in a row.
Yes, which I like that change a lot.
Oh, it's fantastic. You can stutter step now while you cast Banelings. Yep. You just cast one at a time, and there is no lockdown. It is very fluid. From a tank perspective, it leaves me wondering, why are some of our characters like Leoric and Dahaka so clunky when Gul'dan and the new Zagara feel so fluid and free? If I do a skeletal swing, I got to wait for that hammer to go all the way through the arc, and then lazily he shoots out a Drain Hope. Whereas these newer sort of remade characters are just so quick and snappy. I've got Baneling barrages falling. I've got infested drops coming in. I can spawn hunter killers as I run away. But Arthas has to plant his feet and stop and cast a death coil.
I was about to defend it, and then you had to bring Arthas into the mix, and you know I'm biased. So
I know
thank
how to
you.
Get you.
Thank you for pulling me into your court. No, you need variety though, Kyle. You can't have everyone be snappy, be fluid, be fast. Zagara is a Zerg at the end of the day, and now she feels very Zergy. I feel like I'm playing a game of StarCraft now, and I did kind of before just because of creep tumor management, but now. It's nuts. Like you said, stutter stepping with Banelings. Eat your heart out, Terran players.
Yeah, and these things can get a slow augmentation on them. You can do some real cool stuff. She's got a passive promote that only works on range minions at level one you can take.
You can't gloss over that. They removed regeneration on creep at level one. The talent everyone takes, and now that's up in there with the Roach talent and the Baneling talent that was there before. No, that's what I've been taking on the PTR.
And they did something really cool here. Instead of increasing her movement speed or doing something else to augment the way she plays and encourage you to be on creep all the time, they cooked in this new ability to the creep tumor that gives you 20% additional attack range while you're on creep. So not only do you chase faster, but if you just go to the edge of the creep, you can still ping out that damage. And that's a really elegant way to augment her personality without going too ham.
Yeah. That being said, I never want to be off creep again.
No.
With the new way that she's built, because her damage has been reined in quite a bit. Yes, Banelings are now doing more damage, significantly more damage, by the way. Because before they only did 75 damage per Baneling. Now they do 91 damage per Baneling. They also can't be targeted anymore. They don't have health. Which makes me so happy when I'm defending a boss. They're not going to die to the slam.
Oh, and I'm so used to on Raynor penetrating shot every time I see Banelings coming.
Yes, and it feels great. And so I'll miss that on Raynor. But anyways, the Banelings are great. I love to change the Banelings. But Hunter Killer's got a sizable damage nerf. And that alone, I mean, that was the kind of the bread and butter. And her auto attack was brought down as well from 95 to 86. Now, that's a smaller change, so it's still doing a decent amount of damage. But and she just doesn't seem as lethal as she used to be. But what she does seem is like the most insane lane pusher, like harass support in the game now.
And multi-lane pusher. Nidus Network has all the creep talents inside of it now.
Nidus is nuts now, but also, in a way, hamstringed, because you need creep to be there in the first place before you can call up a Nidus Network, Kyle.
Yeah.
Which which is a little strange. And I know everyone's like, dude, level 20. And I'm just want to retort with, dude, level 20.
It's a long way off.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So if you go the Nidus build, if you get to level 20 and you take the endless creep talent, the cast range under creep tumor is increased by 2,000%.
This is about two screens away.
Yes. Yes. So you can't put a creep tumor wherever you want, but you don't need to work very hard to put it wherever you want it.
And you don't have to face check a bush.
No, you don't. You don't need to face check a bush at level one. There's actual range now to laying your creep tumor. It's not super far away. You have to get really close to that bush. And you can still totally get ganked, but you at least don't need to put your face in it.
They're also free.
Yes, they don't cost mana anymore. So that's yes, Zagara has received a rework, but really, it's like her creep has received a massive rework. The way that it functions now is it's very different. It's more important than it has ever been. The Nidus overhaul makes you want to take it. It is all I have seen on the PTR this week. It is all I've tried because I want to play around with it. The 10 charges on Nidus seems almost unnecessary. Makes me wonder if we're getting really big maps in the future.
I'm not sure of that one either, but the creep will die with timed life. So Nidus networks will die, just like Zerg buildings, as the creep recedes away.
Yeah, but once you get your Nidus is up, it's very easy to keep your creep up and running.
Definitely, with a little bit of maintenance.
Yeah. Well, doesn't the Nidus still... it doesn't produce its own creep.
No.
The other thing that's cool is the passive abilities that are built into it. You get 25% additional creep spread passively just by taking Nidus Worm. And it also causes all your basic attacks to lower cooldowns by 1 second while you are on creep. This is built into Nidus Network, Kyle.
It's got battle momentum now.
Yes.
When you take another heroic about split pushing. And let's add to this. The level 16 and 13 stack you can do. At level 13, you can give your Hydralisk Transfusion, which heals you for 75% of the damage dealt. That could be nice, maybe a little bit of survivability. At level 16, you can take Mutalisk, and your Mutalisk is now infinite.
Yes.
No timed life.
What Kyle is getting at is that, very quickly, Zagara players have found out that you can stack Mutalisks basically on top of a wall on a bunch of mercenaries to where the mercenaries won't attack them because they're on like clipping over the wall. And you just have free infinite heals for as long as those mercenaries are still alive.
And they'll finish off the mercenary camp eventually, but then they'll wander into lane and start pushing. And you'll have that health transfusing to you across the map. So you're split pushing, you're generating inside the Nidus network. You've got this Mutalisk going, you have battle momentum. There's so much going for you when you take Nidus network that... it may be the end of Maw. Now, if you go Maw, you wouldn't end up taking Mutalisk probably because you're not split pushing. You do something like Corrosive Saliva, which gives you a giant killer inside your hunter killers. There's potential. But why wouldn't you Nidus Worm?
Yes. Yeah, that's kind of the thing now. Because it's like I said, with these changes, it seems like she has been put in lane push box. Like that is now where she belongs. I'm not going to play Zagara as this assassin when more damage is needed, which is how I typically played her, is, you know, damage build, and I'm still going to push, and I'm still going to be fairly effective at it.
And I found that I do as much numerical damage as I previously did with the Baneling buff and able to put them out on exactly who I want. I mean, when you're walking along with someone, level 20, you have 40% increased movement speed on creep. You can pretty regularly, with the 20% slow on your Baneling, hit one after the other and kite along with your enemies. And it keeps your damage very high. But it's not targeted. Zagara isn't going to kill people. It's that Lunara camp, kind of our Nazebo Gul'dan camp, which empowers auto-attackers and gives Zagara a unique personality. So I'm very pleased with these. I haven't been taking Zagara for a long time because of personal tilt and how much I value sight and how upset I get when people don't value sight as much as me. But you've continued to enjoy Zagara. So what is your cap on top of all this? How do you feel?
I feel like I have to relearn my favorite hero. And that makes me not sure how I feel about it.
You're not excited? That's exciting times.
I am excited, but it's tough because we have still so much to discuss. We're an hour into the show, and there is a discussion to be had, and I'm not sure now is the time or place to talk about are these many changes over a year into a game's launch good overall? Should things be changing this much? Is it good? Does it feel too much still like it's a beta and not a live game? I don't have the answer to that.
Yeah. No, there's something else, too, when you add on top of it that someone paid money for this character. I mean, Asmodan is my second highest played character, and I haven't played him in a year. And he's still one of my top played characters, and that's crazy.
Yeah.
I did a Reign of Demons build. I wanted to split push. I don't want to taste for blood. And that style came in. I lost Asmodan in my eyes. But the developers are human.
Yes.
And I do not expect them to have a future seeing orb that they could see multiple heroes that might encroach on Zagara's territory. And I'm very happy to have her with a defined personality.
Yeah. And in chat room, folks are saying, I think, with MOBAs, constant tweaks and changes are part of the course. And I agree, but this is not a tweak at all. A lot of these aren't tweaks.
But not unknown. We are not setting new MOBA territory.
Yeah.
Many characters are completely reworked. Ultimates change.
Yes.
Across both League of Legends and Dota.
Yeah, and that's part of the discussion as well. What I don't want to get into is the sense of entitlement where it's like, oh, I bought Zagara. I put hours upon hours. I put, days of my life into this hero, learning her, perfecting her, getting really good at her, and now a lot of that time and energy is out the window, but that's on me. I mean, I can't get too mad about it. What I can say is I'm not sure how I feel. And that's the truth, because that is my top played character by a fairly strong margin.
You're great at Maw.
Right. And that's not necessarily going away, providing they fix that bug where it's pushing people to the outside instead of keeping them in the center. But which I'm assuming is a bug. That's not an intended change.
They have said it is a bug.
Yes. Okay, cool. Well, I didn't see that little tidbit. But just overall, it's kind of like, wow, a lot of this is very cool. And I like a lot of the changes. But at the same time, I'm going to have to completely relearn how to play this hero.
And you're getting other people involved. And I think the scariest thing for me is loading up in a quick match and someone yells at me for my talent spec. After a change like this, what, Maw and Zagara, are you nuts?
Yes. Yeah.
Like, what?
Exactly. It's just, it's weird. This particular change is very personal for me when it comes to this game. So it's hard for me. Like I said, very excited. And my first tweet upon reading this was, oh, wow. Okay. Let's do this.
Yeah.
And now I feel like, oh man. Okay. We did that. I am tired and sweaty and a little scared, but anyways. More on Zagara, over the next few weeks. Mirrodin got some changes. He is now no longer going to be unstoppable during Dwarf Toss.
Yeah. Instead, they gave him a 25% damage reduction for 2 seconds after he starts flying through the air.
Yeah.
And other trait values have been increased, just as standard trait, as well as the talents that augment it. He's going to be healing more passively when he hasn't been attacked within a certain amount of time. But losing Unstoppable on Mirrodin does give him more personality. It does allow other heroes to be taken versus Zul and sort of thing. Some more interesting strategy decisions. But that takes a lot of power from Mirrodin, particularly in the pro scene.
Yeah, and it was even brought up in the dev comments. It was hard not to read the paragraph typed in dev comments and not read it as, we're sick of seeing Mirrodin in every pro game. Because that's really what it sounded like.
It's just safe. There's no reason not to.
Right.
And now maybe he can fill that anti-melee reverberation, we need a stun sort of role, rather than we're going to have a tank, right? Yeah. Get Mirrodin. It's fine.
Yep. But I'm happy with this change. I've personal biases, not the biggest Mirrodin player in the world. I very rarely play him, but I'm definitely tired of seeing him in every single pro match, it feels like. So
yeah, really, it seems like our burst, our auto attackers, and everyone kind of decides the pace of the game and how it's going to look when we're watching it. But tanks do decide what sort of engages happen and what abilities we're going to be really paying attention to, because they are the front and center. They're always in the middle of the camera. And this will add variety to our viewing experience.
Yep. Finally, the last hero we wanted to mention was Stitches. He now shoots out his fart rather than leaving it on the ground, Kyle.
Yeah, it's an aggressive little thing. Just sort of spikes out in all directions around him.
Yeah. Does this make him a better house guest?
Well, he'd break everything in the area. Mm. I mean, little minions, when they take this to the face, they do go flying. This will cut down his collateral damage, though, by quite a bit. At least when you're pursuing him, you won't step in the pools he's left behind.
Yes.
Plus, it's probably real nice on the old CPU to not have more ground effects.
Sure. There have actually been quite a few tweaks to the performance of this game that I'm very happy with. Help Hands has now been made standard. Or is it help? It's Helping Hands, isn't it?
Yeah,
Helping Hands. It's toggleable on the number one key by default. You can rebind it to your heart's content.
That is the talent that allows your hooks to grab friendly characters.
Yeah.
So you're toggle it on, toggle it off. Might want to set it to a different button because one's right next to Q.
Yes. Yeah, a small part of me is worried about the troll implications of this.
Wouldn't they have trolled anyway, though?
That's a very good point.
I mean, sure, it's a fun idea, so it may encourage a brief window of trolling.
Yeah. No, I think it's fine. I think it's a good change. Now we have that option as Stitches players. And then the talents based on Vile Gas they have been reworked. So keep an eye out on that if you play Stitches. Just before we get in and have our big discussion about health regen, let's talk about a couple of the outward kind of tidbits from the patch as well. Playing as auto select and quick match now will award a 100% bonus to XP when the matchmaking system detects lengthy queue times for one or more heroes. So you're going to see an icon display over the auto select portrait. And this is, I believe, just for quick match. So just for quick match. I kind of dig this. We've been talking a lot about what is the role of quick match since Unranked was added to the game. And I feel that this is a good statement, kind of doubling down on quick match is wacky. Have a good time.
And let's shorten the queues.
Yeah, that too. Because they are a little rough. So this was not something we thought of when we were like, well, how do you help with queue times in quick match? Because they're a little rough.
I still stand by what I said last episode, that we should open up the MMRs a little bit and let people face harder or easier opponents.
Yeah, I'd be down for that. DirectX 11 support is here, and there's a ton of processor optimizations for Heroes of the Storm as well.
I found even on my decent machine that the PTR was running better.
Yes, me as well. My computer is not out of date, and for some odd reason, Heroes is the thing I have the hardest time streaming.
It is a taxing game.
Overwatch, butter. Just total butter. But anyways, the AI has learned to gank, Kyle.
Yep, so if you're playing an AI game, get ready and don't be by yourself.
Nope. I learned that the hard way while trying out Zagara before taking her into the longest wait for a quick match I've ever been in.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's pretty ridiculous.
Important things to learn.
Yeah. Relentless no longer reduces silence effects. Little side buff to silence there.
Yeah.
Hmm.
We'll see.
Yep.
More silences to come, I assume.
And then Zerglings have been removed from Kerrigan's kit, and Broodlings have been removed from Zagara's kit.
Which could mean the StarCraft map is on its way.
I'm excited, Kyle.
Could be. I was always a little sad that Kerrigan's kit had some Zerglings in it, because we weren't going to get them elsewhere. I did kind of want a Hunter Killer as its own hero, but
I want a
Zerg fanboy.
I want a Speedling as its own hero.
A fat Zergling?
Yes. No, just an upscaled one.
Oh, okay.
You've seen those things in the cinematics. They're huge.
Yeah.
They're so much bigger than they look in the isometric games.
Get the one with the broken horn that's like her little pet for all of Heart of the Swarm.
Oh, you're right. Yes. We need a name for him.
He probably has a name. Well, some technical name they used when they were animating
him. You know what, Kyle? We'll call him Hots.
Oh, I like it. It's a cute name.
Anyways, let's thank our patrons who are supporting us over at patreon.com/ITN. If you're a fan of Into the Nexus, if you are digging it, head on over there and support the show if you want to. This episode, let's thank Michael S., Daniel F., Chameleon Lack, Never Still, Marsh R., Justin, Brian S., and Porter. Thank you all very much for the support. And Kyle, I almost completely forgot to mention, because it is just around the corner, and I'm totally not experiencing any anxiety in any way, shape, or form, but CreateCon is just around the corner, Kyle. It's happening July 30th. We are mere weeks away from you and I being in the same room doing a live Into the Nexus in front of a live audience.
I'm excited for it. It's going to be fun.
It is going to be fun. It's going to be a good time. So there are, if you're interested, it's going to be in Orlando on Saturday, July 30th. There are still tickets available. Just go to createconvention.net or search for CreateCon on Eventbrite. That's where we're selling the tickets. But the other thing I wanted to mention is we have CreateCon shirts available. We're taking pre-orders for the CreateCon shirts. If you are going, you can give free shipping to the con to just pick them up there. If you are not going, you can still have it shipped to your home. So if you want to go take a look at these, there is an Into the Nexus shirt. This is actually the first Into the Nexus shirt that has ever existed. We've never had one before, Kyle.
Ooh, first edition.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And you can go over to Tadpool, that's T-A-D-P-O-O-L, .bigcartel.com, and then continue typing /category/createcon. I know it's not a super great URL, everyone, so sorry, bear with me. We had to get the store up and running very quickly, so huge thanks to SalesGeek for helping us get that up. But go check it out. Got an Into the Nexus shirt up there, got a new Angry Chicken shirt up there, and hope to see a lot of you at CreateCon. It's going to be a good time. Now, Kyle, let's talk about health regeneration for the third week in a row, but with real information we can wrap our heads around.
Choose a talent.
Ah, that seems generous.
Impressive work, hero. I think you're ready for more.
Oh, thank you, Uther. You're so kind. Now, they're coming. They're finally coming. We've talked about them for 2 weeks on two past episodes. We're talking about it one more time. The change to regeneration globes, the cooldown increase on healing well, is coming to the live game this coming Tuesday, Kyle. And we've had a chance to try it out a little bit in the PTR. I have to say, right off the bat, I really like the changes to health orbs.
And we can't talk about this change without bringing in another topic, and that is minions and catapults. And this is going to be crazy. Get ready for Heroes of the Storm 2.0. Catapults now lock on.
Yeah.
If they target a fort, a tower, a core, they will lock on. They will not let go. Those random spawning minions will not cause them to deviate from their original plan. They have increased attack range, so they won't be hit by the core if they're pushed out of the way of minions at all. They're really safe at a distance. Range and melee and wizard minions, the smaller ones, now deal double damage to structures. This will be live this Tuesday.
Yeah.
So if I am a specialist, and kind of like Towers of Doom, if I deliver minions to a fort, to a wall, to the core, backing out after it, I have now secured myself probably that fort, or at the very least caused the enemy team to respond to what I'm up to.
Yeah,
Split Push Zagara is going to be huge. She's going to be delivering these catapults onto your core and getting out on a Nidus Worm.
Yep.
So not only are we going to have to figure out who backs, like that's something the whole meta is going to have to adapt for. Right now, if catapults are on the core, there's a 50% chance no one does anything, and then there's a 50% chance three people start teleporting out. The tank and the support are staying in the pit and on Infernal Shrines, but Jayne and Azebo and your Greymane are all going back. We need to learn which one of those we keep. We probably send Azebo, in all honesty, the specialist. If they're currently targeting the core, maybe we send Jayne, because she'll destroy them very quickly with burst damage. We're going to have to figure this out. And it's going to be very interesting. But at the same time that this change is being added, we're getting the increase on the health regeneration orbs. A mana increase, 32 mana over 4 seconds, is now 8% of your total mana. Really huge for Gul'dan, who has no mana regeneration at all, to grab an orb. But this means you'll be more active on the field all the time. You don't need to hearth back as often, because your well is going to take better care of you. And if you already managed your well pretty well, you probably weren't using it 20 seconds earlier, so the increase on its cooldown won't really affect you, but grabbing those orbs, using that more powerful weld now will keep you extremely busy, meaning you can actually respond to all these lanes being pushed and get to those catapults before they reach your forts, your keeps, and your cores. I guess they would only ever reach cores, but, you know, what have you. Minions dealing double damage to all buildings.
Now, one of the big reasons they've been toying with the regen orbs is because they want to make this dance of maybe getting a little greedy to get your orb and maybe being a little overly aggressive to deny an orb becomes more of a thing. Do you think they've accomplished that? Do you think we're going to see a lot more people trying to deny enemies getting their regeneration globes?
Maybe. You know, maybe we camp that tank right on top of the orb so no one can get in range to grab it, or to do so would be too dangerous. Certainly getting 8% mana on a spellcaster feels pretty darn good right now, and 12% of your maximum health feels really good on a warrior. I don't know, and that's going to be the confusing part of it. Will Hyra in play see globe negation in a style and lane? I think we're going to be too busy. I think we're already, you know, 2 minutes in looking at the objective, 50 seconds in on Blackheart's Bay, those coins show up. I don't think it'll truly affect the play. Something more like these minions and being topped off to deal with them are going to affect the late game, and that's where we'll see the big swing in play style.
Well said. Okay. It's a good point. Yeah, there's just not enough of a lane phase, although that things could change with Zagara the way she is. She's so strong. Well, she's so strong in a lane now that this is, in a way, kind of a buff to her.
Definitely. And any specialist in the game or anyone with lane clear. And that's something we've always sort of danced around. We all know we want a nice solo tank. We all want a nice solo support. We want auto attacks. We want burst and a specialist. That's kind of the pretty little package that Blizzard put in our heads. But the lane clear is something you don't really think about much. If you end up in a game with Rainer, Vala, let's just stop there just for simplicity. Let's throw Kerrigan in. Sure, why not? Those guys have great damage, but it's all a little bit single targeted. So if you are looking down the barrel of a huge minion push, Vala's going to be working there for days. Whereas Kael'thas, Jaina, you know, these lane clear heavy heroes are just going to come through and sweep it up. So building a comp that had lane clear in the first place is always going to mean an easier win. You will defend things easier. You will get XP quickly. If you're on your way to the top shrine and there's a minion wave happening in the middle, you can clear that in a second and still make it to the top shrine on time. So now when we're putting together our comps, we will have to take that into account, because otherwise we are going to be completely overrun by these more powerful minions.
All right. So are you happy with the change overall? Because it sounds to me just more active.
And that's great. I want to be more active in this game. There's times where there isn't anything to do, particularly on the defensive when you're behind in levels. You know, it'll stink to have that vice that much tighter. But it's something to do. It's more gamey.
Yeah.
We're having more fun, I think.
I think it also speeds things up a bit. And let's face it, the games in Heroes have been becoming increasingly longer and longer. And while they're still short in comparison to something like Dota 2, I feel like we've tacked on a good 10 to 15 minutes to the average game length. At least it feels anecdotally for me.
And we will continue to do that every time the skill cap goes up and players get better and understand maps more. I mean, right now we do have a change coming in with this patch that Garden Terrors are going to do bonus damage to structures going up from 100% to 200% in order to reduce game time. Is that healthy? Like, do we just want winning teams to win harder? That does end the game in a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
That kind of goes into our death timer talk of last week, where Heroes of the Storm is, I think, one of the hardest, most punishing MOBAs there is. Because you have a minute-long death timer in a 30-minute-long game. If you give me a one-minute death timer in an hour-long game, I'm not that affected.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I have my trolley response to Garden of Terror is like, I would just like to not play the Battleground. But
sure.
Over it, for some reason. More so than the older maps like Dragon Shrine or Dragonshire and Blackheart's Bay. But, yeah, Again, I mean, I'm still just wrapping my head around these changes. It's more stuff just completely out of left field, like so many of the changes that we saw in this patch. But I'm pretty excited about it. I like the changes. I hope that this shortens the game. Do you think this will ever push? Because this has been rattling around in the back of my head forever, pretty much since the game was announced. I think this is ever going to get to the point where we get rid of ammo on towers.
Oh, that's an interesting thought. Well, we because it's one more demolitionist from the game.
Yes. Yes, we did. And it does seem counterintuitive if the goal overall is to reduce game length. But I've always found it very strange that forts are as or towers and forts are as weak as they are in this game.
Mm.
And then on top of that, to institute ammunition.
Yeah. They'll be weaker now.
Yes.
All it takes is a lock on from, you know, those wizard minions, those ranged and melees to do that double damage.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Now there's only one wizard and then there's three ranged, but yeah, I don't know, man. It's one more reason for me to shake off my fear and just learn Zagara anyway.
Definitely. We're going to need someone that's that attentive to our lanes. When we get behind, the real problem with this is, or potentially the big problem is, the winning team gets all their globes because the enemy team's pushed out and too afraid to engage them. The winning team now delivers minions, locking people in their base further. Will the winning team win the game faster and go, I think where Blizzard's trying to push this, which is shorter game length, or will they go shopping? Will they play safe? Will they go get that last Infernal Shrine and push with the Punisher? Just to be sure.
Yeah. And we've been harping on Zagara just because she got so many massive changes that she looks very different now. But what about other specialists that are already in the game? What about Asmodan? Kyle, I saw a couple Asmodans on the PTR this week, and General of Hell now seems way more terrifying than it did before.
It did once they lock on.
Yeah.
Granted, in light of Zagara's sweet infinite mutilisk, I'm kind of hoping Asmodan gets a little infinite, but you know, that's kind of insane. That general's very powerful.
That was a bit where I was leading you. A lot of this seems in service to make the specialist role as a lane pusher more defined and more important and more rewarding if you do it correctly. Do the other specialists need more love? Do they need to be brought into this more clear and defined role that Zagara has? Or are they okay? You know, Asmodan already has General of Hell.
But yeah, he can clear lanes very quickly with Blackpool. Nazebo has a zombie wall he can put out, and our normal lane minions are not going to lock on, so that'll cause enough disruption for them to stop targeting the towers. The more scary thought is, you know, what happens with Leoric, who lost his lane clear. What about Kael'thas and Jaina, who have lane clear sort of built into their kits, and now they've gotten a buff in the new meta, and they'll continue to be top picks.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, all right. Well, again, all of this, everything we're talking about right now is coming Tuesday. So be prepared. If you had a kind of a parting thought to leave everyone with on this, on how to, how to prepare yourself mentally for the new state of pretty lethal minions, at least when it comes to structures, what would you say to the other random four people you might get matched with?
Look at that comp. Make sure it has lane clear. And to discuss that further, maybe its own strategy section. What this does mean, though, is Gul'dan has lane clear, and he's going to release in an awesome place, and I'm very excited for him.
Awesome. Looking forward to him as well. Well, let's take one email and wrap this episode up.
Darkness stopped calling.
Does anyone else hear that buzzing?
Hold on. Darkness just texted me.
You can send your emails to itncast@gmail.com. Our email today comes to us from Greer, who writes a question I've already posed this episode, but it was hard to dance around with Zagara, but now we can kind of dive into it. Do you think that outside of major reworks, is the constant tweaking of heroes bad for the game? For me, I visit Heroes Nexus almost every day, watch Into the Nexus every week, and I still can't keep up with the volume of hero changes made each patch. It almost feels that we are still in beta and not over a year past launch. What do you think? And I've clearly very much in Guerrero's camp here. I would say that not every patch, obviously, is this big, Kyle. This is a little... This patch is special.
Yes.
In a way, the way that it has overshadowed a new hero that so many of us have been looking forward to, that have been chanting the name of since this game was announced, I find fascinating. But yes, we did just get the ranked play revamp. That was a huge change. But overall, it didn't change a whole lot for the game itself. Like, there were some balance tweaks here and there, but nothing to the degree of what we're seeing on the PTR right now.
And I think that's where the beta feel comes from, is this formality of a rank system that goes, it's here, everybody, finally, your skills will be realized. And then we have this many changes 2 weeks into it.
Yeah, it's like, and oh, by the way, those skills, get ready to throw them out the window and learn some new ones.
And it's one thing to think, I'll look at my own heroes, the ones I really care about. Oh, yes, I've read over Greymane, let's go. That's easy. But knowing what Zagara in the lane opposite me is doing, that's really important in a MOBA. I need to understand what she's doing on my team so I can play to her strengths. And I need to know what's barreling down at me across the lane from the enemy side. And that's where the real time sink of playing a MOBA comes in. And I can see why that's frightening and very time consuming to people to have changes like this. I mean, this is team one, so I'm still flabbergasted that this whole team is as open as it is or as fluid as it is.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't that way in the early StarCraft II days.
But I know from reading interviews this week with multiple developers, this is something they set out to do when Heroes of the Storm became its own game outside of the StarCraft engine. They made a choice and they had to restructure their entire teams to not work on a box product, and they didn't know how to do it, which kind of speaks to some of the problems we've seen over the last year and a half.
Yeah.
But they're learning, and these are all steps in the right direction. We're going to have a better game because of it. You know, and I'm kind of sad for the day when we go into the sort of Dota 2 place where it's the big once or twice a year update. And it's got a lot of fanfare and it brings with it one new hero. And that's a little sad in my eyes.
Yes. Yeah. Given my choice between that is this, Kyle, which I'll call the right side of the pendulum swing, and Dota 2, which is the left side of the pendulum swing, I would definitely prefer to be on this side of it.
And it's an older game. It's not like they said, no, we're done updating this game. Get out. They've done all they can in incremental updates.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I think it's good for the game, too. I mean, I think at some point there's got to be a limit, right? There has to be at some point where you've gone too far, where it's too many changes too frequently. This is the first time I'm really kind of feeling that. But again, there's a very personal bias for me here.
And I think overall, this patch is going to be extremely, extremely healthy for specialists.
I think so as well. No, I think that's just going to wrap up our thoughts on this. If you're watching live and you're a patron, stick around. We'll do some after show games. Thanks again to our patrons supporting us over at patreon.com/ITN, guys. We really do appreciate it. You can also drop us a review on iTunes if you dig the show. So this week we wanted to thank SBBJ for the most recent 5-star iTunes review. Thank you, man. Check out more about this show and all of Kyle's Extra Heroes content, which I really recommend everyone go check out over at amove.tv. Big thanks to our Patreon producers, Declan H. and Cheesy Bob. You can get more ITN swag over at bit.ly/amovestore. Or again, just head on over to amove.tv right now. There is a link to the new shirts for CreateCon. You can go pick yourself up a new Into the Nexus shirt with all kinds of silly in-jokes written all over it. So go take a look at it. Catch us live Thursday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern on twitch.tv/amovetv or on alphagigradio.com. I will be gone for the next two I will be traveling starting Thursday of next week. It just happens to fall right when we would do an Into the Nexus, so I'll miss two of them. Kyle, huge thanks to you for holding it down while I'm gone.
I'm absolutely
sure you won't have any issue whatsoever.
No. No. It's going to be fine. I look forward to our guests, whoever they might be.
Whoever they might be. Jeff Canada. Calling Jeff Canada. Are you there, Jeff Canada? Follow the show on Twitter, @ITNcast. And big thanks to Gorath for our intro music and Brian Griffith for our outro music. Kyle, when you're not doing this particular hero show, where can folks find you?
You can find me at KyleFerguson.com. That's where you can find Heroes of the Storm lessons, the links to everything I do. But check out YouTube.com/KyleFerguson for the solo QA VODs or join the live shows. Those happen at 3 p.m. Pacific, Tuesday, Wednesday at Twitch.tv/KyleFerguson. I know I'm strange. I'm using my real name on the internet.
Yes, as am I, which seems even stranger because who the hell can spell Weinzerl?
Mm.
Which is why you'll find that I don't use that anywhere. It's not in my Twitter. It's not on my emails. Nope. But it's out there. Anyways, you can find me on Twitter at GarrettArt. You can find me talking about Hearthstone on The Angry Chicken. Find me talking about Overwatch on Overwatchers. You can find me talking to myself on The Angry Nerd. And most importantly, you can find Kyle and I talking to each other in the same room on Saturday, July 30th in Orlando at CreateCon, doing a live Into the Nexus. It's going to be a good time. Hope to see many of you there. Tickets and details over at createconvention.net. That's going to do it for this episode of Into the Nexus. Until next time, good luck and have fun, everyone.
Take care.
Life tap.
Tap it.